When John Dewey published Experience and Education in 1938, he couldn't have known it would become the philosophical cornerstone for modern educational theory. The slim volume, barely 100 pages, has influenced generations of educators, from Montessori schools to Harvard lecture halls. Oprah Winfrey once cited it as the book that most shaped her understanding of how people truly learn. While tech innovator Steve Jobs referenced Dewey's experiential philosophy when designing Apple's creative workplace culture. What makes this work so enduring is its radical yet deeply intuitive premise that genuine education isn't about passively receiving information, but actively experiencing and constructing meaning from our interactions with the world. In a time when educational debates rage fiercer than ever, from classroom technology to standardized testing, Dewey's balanced perspective offers wisdom that transcends political divides and speaks to something fundamental about human growth and development. Humans have a peculiar tendency to think in stark opposites, creating rigid either-or frameworks that leave no room for nuanced middle ground. This binary thinking has plagued educational philosophy throughout history, manifesting today as the heated battle between traditional and progressive education. Traditional education centers on transmitting established knowledge and skills from the past. It operates through a rigidly organized institutional structure where teachers serve as authoritative agents who deliver content to students expected to demonstrate docility and obedience. The system aims to prepare youth for future responsibilities by having them acquire organized bodies of information and accepted rules of conduct. The focus remains squarely on mastering what previous generations deemed important, with little consideration for individual differences or changing social conditions. Progressive education emerged as a reaction against these rigid practices. It champions individuality, free activity, learning through experience, and acquiring skills as means to vital ends rather than as isolated ends themselves. It emphasizes maximizing present opportunities and engaging with a changing world rather than preparing for a remote future. The progressive approach rejects the notion that education should primarily involve absorbing information from textbooks or listening to lectures about disconnected subjects. However, principles only become meaningful through their application. The danger in any new movement lies in defining itself negatively by what it opposes, rather than developing a coherent, positive philosophy. Many progressive schools have fallen into this trap, mistakenly believing that rejecting external authority means abandoning all authority, or that honoring students' freedom minimizing teacher guidance. This rejection of traditional practices without thoughtful replacement creates new problems. Rejecting external authority doesn't eliminate the need for authority. It demands finding more effective sources of authority. Progressive education may actually require more intimate contact between teachers and students, not less. The challenge becomes establishing these connections without violating the principle of learning through personal experience. Many newer schools err by minimizing organized subject matter, treating adult guidance as an invasion of freedom, or neglecting history's role in education. Progressive education can become as dogmatically rigid as traditional education when not based on critical examination of its principles. The path forward requires thoughtfully addressing fundamental questions about freedom, the teacher's role, and connecting past knowledge to present challenges, not merely rejecting tradition. When we reject traditional educational methods, we create a new set of problems that require careful consideration. Unlike traditional schools that could operate on established routines, progressive education demands a coherent philosophy of experience to guide practice. The central challenge becomes understanding what constitutes meaningful educational experience. While all genuine education comes through experience, not all experiences educate equally or at all. Some experiences actually miseducate by arresting growth, creating callousness, fostering rigid habits, promoting carelessness, or remaining disconnected from other experiences. Traditional classrooms weren't devoid of experiences, they simply provided the wrong kind. These experiences often made students callous to ideas, limited judgment through mindless drill, bred boredom, disconnected learning from life, or created aversion to subjects that should inspire curiosity. Every experience has two critical aspects: its immediate quality, is it engaging, meaningful, enjoyable? And its influence on future experiences, does it open doors or close them? The educator's responsibility involves arranging experiences that both engage students now and promote desirable future experiences. Every experience lives on in subsequent experiences, what psychologists now call transfer of learning, making the selection of present experiences that contribute fruitfully to future growth the central educational problem. Progressive education isn't simpler than traditional education. It's simpler in principle, but more challenging in practice. Working out appropriate materials, methods, and social relationships for experience-based education requires tremendous thought and creativity. The true challenge isn't merely rejecting tradition, but developing a coherent theory of experience that provides positive direction. Think about learning to cook. A traditional approach might have students memorize recipes and techniques before ever touching an ingredient. A poorly conceived progressive approach might just let students loose in the kitchen without guidance, leading to frustration and waste. A thoughtfully progressive approach would involve students in actual cooking while providing appropriate structure, guidance, and reflection, perhaps starting with simple dishes that build skills for more complex ones later, with a teacher who knows when to demonstrate, when to question, and when to step back. Organization shouldn't be avoided, but reconceived on an empirical and experimental basis. The question isn't whether to organize educational experiences, but how to organize them in ways that honor both immediate engagement and long-term growth. To distinguish between educative and miseducative experiences, we need clear criteria. Two fundamental principles provide this framework: continuity and interaction. The principle of continuity recognizes that every experience modifies the person who undergoes it, and, through this modification, affects the quality of subsequent experiences. This principle rests on the biological concept of habit, not as mere repetition of acts, but as acquired attitudes and dispositions that shape future actions. Every experience takes something from those that came before it and modifies those that follow. But continuity alone doesn't provide sufficient grounds for discrimination. We must consider the direction of growth. A person might grow as a burglar or corrupt politician, developing skills and habits in those directions. The essential question becomes, does this growth create conditions for further growth in general, or does it shut off opportunities for continuing development? Only when development in a particular direction promotes continuing growth does it satisfy the criterion of education. Consider a child who throws tantrums to get what they want. If adults consistently give in, the child learns that tantrums work, a form of growth in a particular direction. But this growth limits broader development by reducing the child's need to develop language skills, emotional regulation, and consideration for others. The momentary satisfaction creates a pattern that ultimately restricts rather than expands possibilities. The quality of present experience profoundly influences how continuity applies. Overindulging a child creates an attitude that operates as an automatic demand for catering to desires, potentially arresting development. Conversely, experiences that arouse curiosity and strengthen initiative carry a person over inevitable obstacles. Every experience is a moving force whose value can be judged only by what it moves toward. The second principle, interaction, recognizes that experience doesn't occur solely inside a person. While experience influences internal attitudes, every genuine experience also has an active side that changes objective conditions. We live from birth to death in a world shaped by transmitted human activities. A child in an urban environment has fundamentally different experiences than one raised in rural settings. a child in a culturally rich home encounters different stimuli than one in an impoverished environment. Together, these principles, continuity and interaction, form what we might call a situation. Traditional education erred by emphasizing external conditions while neglecting internal factors. Progressive education shouldn't make the opposite mistake by focusing exclusively on freedom and interest without attending to objective conditions. The educator's responsibility includes arranging objective conditions while respecting freedom. This doesn't limit freedom, but widens it through intelligent regulation. Freedom shouldn't be judged by momentary incidents, but the continuity of developing experience, the long-term trajectory of growth. Educational experiences don't happen in isolation. They're embedded in social contexts that profoundly shape their quality and impact. To understand social control in education, we can examine everyday situations outside schools where people experience considerable social control without feeling their freedom restricted. Children's games provide an illuminating example of natural social control. Games operate through rules that are integral to the activity, not external impositions. Without rules, there is no game. Different rules create different games. Players don't feel they're submitting to external authority, but simply participating in the game itself. When disputes arise, children object to violations of rules, not to the rules themselves. These rules carry the sanction of tradition and precedent, with children often emulating adult models. Control emerges from the whole situation in which individuals are involved as cooperative parts. Even in competitive games, participants share a common experience without feeling bossed by superior persons. This illustrates how social control can operate without violating individual freedom, a model for classroom dynamics. In well-functioning communities, whether families, neighborhoods, or classrooms, social order emerges not from any individual's will, but from the moving spirit of the whole group. Control is social, with individuals functioning as parts of a community rather than outside it. While occasions arise requiring direct parental or teacher authority, these are relatively few compared to situations where control emerges naturally from group participation. Children intuitively sense the difference between arbitrary personal power and fair action that serves group interests, often showing greater sensitivity to this distinction than adults. In traditional schools, teachers often kept order through direct intervention because the classroom lacked a genuine community structure. In progressive schools, social control resides in the shared work itself, where all contribute and feel responsibility. The educator must thoughtfully plan activities that lend themselves to social organization, allowing all individuals to participate meaningfully. While exceptional cases of unruly or passive students exist, these shouldn't determine the general principle of social control. The teacher's greater maturity and knowledge should be used to arrange conditions conducive to communal projects that naturally exercise control over individual impulses. Social conventions and manners, while varying across cultures and times, prevent friction in relationships. In some progressive schools, visitors are shocked by children's lack of manners, which may reflect eager engagement with activities, but also represents a failure to teach mutual accommodation, an essential life lesson. When social forms become empty rituals, the solution isn't to abandon formality entirely, but to develop forms appropriate to genuine social situations. True freedom isn't merely physical movement, but represents the freedom of intelligence, observation, and judgment exercised for worthwhile purposes. The physical constraints of traditional classrooms with fixed rows, regimented movement, and strict silence have historically restricted not just bodily freedom, but, more importantly, intellectual freedom. However, increasing physical liberty should be understood as a means to enable deeper learning, not an end goal itself. Increased physical freedom offers several key advantages in the educational environment. First, it allows teachers to truly know their students, as enforced quietude creates an artificial uniformity that masks students' true natures, thinking patterns, and learning styles. When students can move, interact, and express themselves naturally, teachers gain invaluable insights into their thought processes, interests, and challenges. Second, it acknowledges the fundamental nature of learning itself. Physical passivity tends to promote mental passivity, while hands-on environments like laboratories, workshops, and makerspaces naturally require movement and engagement. For instance, a student learning about plant biology will understand far more through actively tending a garden than by merely reading about photosynthesis. While periods of quiet reflection remain valuable, they're most effective when following periods of active engagement and experiential learning. The ancient Greeks embodied this wisdom in their educational philosophy, understanding the deep connection between physical and mental health through their concept of sound mind in a sound body. The amount of external freedom needed varies significantly by individual and typically decreases with maturity. Younger children generally require more physical movement, while older students can engage in longer periods of focused study. Freedom must not be treated as an end in itself, which makes it negative and potentially destructive. True freedom is positive, the power to form purposes, judge wisely, evaluate desires by their consequences, and select appropriate means to achieve chosen ends. Growth requires reconstructing our natural impulses through reflection and thoughtful consideration. The phrase "stop and think" represents sound psychology, postponing immediate action to bring impulses into connection with other possibilities, thereby creating a more comprehensive and effective plan of action. Self-control, which should be education's ideal aim, isn't achieved by merely removing external controls, which may leave one subject to accidental circumstances and whims. Impulses not ordered by intelligence remain under the control of chance, creating only an illusion of freedom while actually being directed by forces beyond one's command. For instance, a student who has never developed self-discipline might find themselves unable to complete important tasks without external pressure, essentially becoming a prisoner to their own lack of internal structure. Consider a child who has complete freedom to touch a hot stove. The resulting burn doesn't represent freedom, but its opposite, subjection to physical consequence without the intellectual freedom to foresee and avoid harm. True freedom would involve understanding heat, predicting consequences, and making an informed choice, the freedom of intelligence rather than impulse. This principle extends to all areas of learning. Genuine freedom comes from developing the knowledge and judgment to make informed decisions, not from the mere absence of restrictions. Freedom manifests as the power to frame and execute purposes through intelligence, which is fundamentally inseparable from self-control. Progressive education emphasizes learner participation in forming educational purposes, addressing a critical shortcoming of traditional education, which often fails to secure pupils' active cooperation in the learning process. This collaborative approach recognizes that genuine learning occurs when students are invested in their educational journey. A genuine purpose always begins with an impulse, a natural urge to act or create. When immediate execution of this impulse encounters obstacles, it transforms into desire, though neither impulse nor desire alone constitutes purpose. True purpose requires careful foresight of consequences, demanding both intelligence and systematic observation of objective conditions. Impulses produce consequences through complex interactions with surroundings, necessitating careful attention to environmental conditions, available resources, and potential outcomes. While observation is crucial, it must be paired with understanding. We must comprehend the significance of what we perceive through thoughtful reflection on past experiences and consideration of potential future implications. The formation of purposes involves several sophisticated intellectual operations working in concert. Detailed observation of surroundings, drawing on knowledge from similar past situations, both personal experiences and lessons learned from others, and exercising careful judgment to determine significance. Purpose fundamentally differs from raw impulse by translating initial desire into a structured plan based on foreseen consequences. Educational processes must therefore create space between immediate action and execution, allowing time for observation and judgment to intervene. A common mistake in educational practice is overemphasizing activity without sufficient attention to intelligent activity, incorrectly equating freedom with the immediate execution of impulses. Consider a practical example, a child who wants to build a treehouse. The initial impulse might be simply, "I want a treehouse." But transforming this impulse into meaningful purpose requires multiple considerations: evaluating available materials and their costs, identifying necessary tools and skills, understanding structural requirements and safety considerations, planning a logical sequence of construction steps, and obtaining necessary permissions. The child must synthesize various sources of knowledge: past experiences with simple construction projects, observations of existing treehouses, basic physics principles, and judgment about suitable locations and design choices. This process might include measuring trees, researching building techniques, creating scale drawings, and developing a materials list, all steps that transform an impulse into purposeful action. The teacher's role in this process is multifaceted and crucial. Rather than dismissing the impulse or taking control of the project, effective teachers guide the formation of purpose through thoughtful questioning, strategic suggestions, and careful scaffolding of learning experiences. They might ask probing questions about structural stability, help students research similar projects, or facilitate discussions about safety considerations. This guidance aids rather than restricts freedom by helping students develop more sophisticated and achievable purposes. Teachers shouldn't hesitate to make suggestions, as these suggestions represent valuable input from experienced practitioners. However, the key lies in ensuring that activities express the students' evolving purposes rather than merely implementing the teacher's predetermined plans. The optimal solution involves teachers deeply understanding their students' capacities and needs while allowing suggestions to develop into cooperative plans through meaningful contributions from all participants. This collaborative approach helps students learn to transform their impulses into achievable purposes while developing critical thinking and planning skills. All studies must derive from materials within ordinary life experience, contrasting with traditional approaches that begin with facts outside learners' experience. Finding material within experience is only the first step. It must then develop progressively into fuller, richer, more organized forms, approaching how subject matter appears to mature persons. Natural development occurs even without formal education, as infants expand their environments through learning to reach, creep, walk, and talk. Educators must consciously continue this natural expansion. While connecting to learners' existing experience is widely accepted, ensuring orderly development toward expansion and organization of subject matter receives less attention, especially with older children, where determining background experience and directing it toward larger fields becomes more challenging. Merely providing new experiences isn't enough. New objects and events must intellectually connect to earlier experiences, advancing conscious articulation of facts and ideas. Educators must select elements from existing experience that promise to present new problems, stimulating new observations and judgments. The educator must have a long view, seeing present work in terms of future implications. A more difficult task than in traditional education, where teachers could focus on next examinations or promotions within conventional systems. Traditional education selected subject matter outside learners' experiences, focusing on the past. Progressive education rightly emphasizes present experience, but sometimes wrongly ignores the past. This is unsound. The past provides essential means for understanding the present. Present experience must stretch backward to expand into the future. Political and economic issues cannot be understood without knowing their historical development. Attempting to address problems without historical context leads to superficial measures that ultimately worsen existing problems. Progressive schools' weakest point is selecting and organizing intellectual subject matter, an inevitable growing pain as they break from traditional education's rigid materials. While a single curriculum for all progressive schools is impossible, the movement must recognize that subject matter selection is fundamental. Improvisation prevents learning from becoming stereotyped, but basic material cannot be cursory. Growth requires overcoming difficulties through intelligence, with problems arising from present experience but leading into unfamiliar territory. Modern life is shaped by applied science. Children encounter electricity, chemistry, and physics in daily activities. Students should approach scientific principles through everyday applications, the most direct avenue to understanding science and later comprehending economic and industrial problems. The educator's responsibility is using present experiences to gradually lead learners toward scientific understanding. Science not only explains current social conditions, but points toward creating a better social order. Progressive education must organize subject matter from present experience toward greater refinement, not by passively receiving pre-organized knowledge, but through active organization of facts and ideas. All educative experience requires better, more orderly arrangement of knowledge, moving from concrete experiences to abstract understanding. Even young children's experience has inherent organization centered around family and home relationships, daily routines, and immediate social interactions. Education must modulate from this intimate social center toward more objective intellectual organization, with the cause and effect principle fundamental to scientific understanding. Young children naturally grasp causal relations through means-consequence connections in everyday activities, like understanding that pushing a button turns on a light, or that watering plants helps them grow. Intelligent activity differs fundamentally from aimless activity by consciously selecting means and arranging them systematically to reach intended purposes. This represents the essence of scientific thinking in its most basic form. We face two clear alternatives in modern education: return to pre-scientific intellectual methods based on authority and tradition, or systematically utilize scientific method as the pattern for intelligent exploration of experience. The scientific method attaches primary importance to ideas as hypotheses that must be continuously tested, revised, and refined through experience. Ideas are tested rigorously by observing the consequences when acted upon, much like experiments in a laboratory. True intellectual organization requires reflective review, looking back to extract meaningful patterns and principles that become capital stock for future experiences and investigations. This process connects intimately with the fundamental requirement that experiences must lead into an expanding world of subject matter, viewing teaching as continuous reconstruction of experience with a long-term developmental perspective. Education must be firmly grounded in the actual life experience of individuals to accomplish its ends, not floating abstractly in theoretical realms. Both educational conservatives and radicals express deep discontent with the present educational situation, though for different reasons. The system must ultimately move either backward to pre-scientific standards of knowledge transmission or forward to greater utilization of scientific method in developing expanding experience through active inquiry. The path of experience-based education is not easier but more demanding and strenuous, requiring serious cooperative work among teachers, students, and educational theorists. It demands careful observation, thoughtful reflection, and systematic testing of ideas. The fundamental issue isn't simply new versus old education, but what constitutes genuine education without qualifying adjectives. Discovering what essential conditions must be satisfied for education to be reality rather than mere slogan. In practice, this means creating learning environments where students actively investigate phenomena, test hypotheses, and construct understanding through direct experience. Dewey's vision challenges educators to create educational environments where experience isn't just permitted, but thoughtfully cultivated, where freedom manifests as intelligent self-direction, where community enables meaningful cooperation and dialogue, and where knowledge isn't imposed from above, but constructed through active engagement with the natural and social world through scientific modes of inquiry.